Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Harry Booth Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and special guest co-host, Clayton Sayre. Tonight's topic, The Devil's Reign. Well, hey everybody, and welcome back to the old podcast, and welcome back, Clayton.
Yeah, it's been a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, tonight, man, we're going to talk about one that we have talked about for quite a long time, The Devil's Reign, and pretty much The Devil's Reign with William Shatner. Well, been nice
Ernest
talking
Borgnine.
To you. Well, been nice talking to you. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, both people just shut off the internet, you know, because of that.
Well, that's not, I mean, what else do you really say? You said, you know, Bill Shatner's in it, Ernest Borgnine. Okay, we're done, and good night.
Well, Kanan Wynn.
Actually, it has a cast of thousands, you know. Kanan Wynn, Borgnine, Shatner, Travolta, Tom Skerritt.
Eddie Albert,
Woody Chambliss, and Anton LaVey has a bit part in it.
And Ida Lupino.
I mean, come on, man. Tons of people in this thing. Lots of great 70s character actors. Some of them right at the beginning of their career. Some of them right in the middle. Some of them winding down. I mean, it runs the gamut.
Yeah, a couple of them at the end.
And Shatner thought he was at the end, but man, getting ready to take off again.
That's right. These are the slum years.
Yeah, these are the mid toop years for Bill.
These are the bad toop.
Not as bad as the previous couple of years. If you look at some of, like, where he did a movie called, I can't think of the name of the movie now. But, and he got married.
A horror at 37,000 feet, which is not the Twilight Zone. It's another thing. That was bad. Place of the Wildcats is a pretty bad toop.
Oh, yeah, but this is where they start to look a little better from here on. Because, you know, they had started to do talks of bringing Star Trek back at this point. So he was feeling better about himself.
It's still early in the game, and it's still pretty bad hair.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, this is 1975 is when this came out. Yeah, and this, like I said, this isn't his best, but it's better than the previous one he was wearing, like when he got married to Marcy, whatever her name was. Check that one out.
Lafferty.
Ooh, yeah. That was a rough one.
But, yeah, that's a bad one.
But Shat, you know, turning in a Shat quality performance in this.
Oh, this is painful. This is painful to watch that. Oh, although you get the screaming Shat and a lot of it. I love the fact that in this movie on the in the original press book, when they showed the pictures of the actors under Shatner's, it was tortured soul.
You know,
and that's pretty much what happens in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they try to pull a Psycho move where they kill off the lead character, you know, partway through it. And in Psycho, where it worked in Psycho, it doesn't really in this so much as it feels. I mean, they don't kill him off, but they kind of do. You don't see him after the first third of the movie, except little bits in that flashback.
Yeah, and then he comes back at the end.
Yeah, but then, you know, it's like it's Shatner's movie, and then all of a sudden it's Tom Skerritt's movie, and you're like, what? What just happened here?
Yeah, it's an odd movie. I think the byline for this movie should be a PG movie about Satan.
Yeah. Well, you know, it plays like a TV movie, and almost like it's like it's stretched a bit thin, where it could have played as a half-hour TV episode or right at an hour TV episode. But it goes on for like about 80 minutes or something, almost an hour and a half.
No. Yeah, it's 86 minutes.
Yeah, and that's about
why I know that. Who knows? But but it is 86 minutes. And if you took away the 20 minutes of the rain,
the melting guy. And we got the point, folks. We got the point. You can cut that
They were determined to get their money's worth.
Oh, man. that you're right, though. That scene goes on forever.
One of the things about this is a movie that is, like you say, it's almost a TV movie or a TV episode, and it never really knows what it wants to do. What is the point of this whole thing? And it bounces around so bad, which is always surprising considering, like, all the talent that went into this thing. So I thought, I would hit you with some of this, since we love to have these how are all these people connected in all these ways?
Oh, so, yeah.
The first one was, if you follow 70s schlock stuff, the name Sandy Howard inevitably is going to come up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sandy Howard was a producer. And on the list of this man's are such notable memories as Neptune Factor. So that's the connection to Ernest Borgnine. Island of Dr. Moreau, the 77 version.
Oh.
He was a producer, yeah. Executive producer.
Yeah.
Meteor.
Oh.
Yeah. Avenging Angel. And Angel. The first
well,
one,
you do one, you got to do the other. I mean, you know.
And another one that deserves to be talked about, Embryo.
Oh. Wow.
Which was an HBO staple along with Food of the Gods.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
An odd thing was this cat directed Gamera. The 66 Gamera. He directed the thing. Yeah.
Holy crap.
So, I mean, you know, he came to us with this stuff. Shatner, you know, Borgnine, all these. Ina Lupina, this was pretty much at the... I think everything in her IMDb at this point is Mrs. Somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was a director.
Oh.
Dating back to the, all the way back to the I think, the late 40s as a female director. In fact, one of the best Twilight Zones, which is The Mask
wow.
episode, she directed.
Wow, I didn't know that.
She did a bunch of thrillers. She did, you know, a lot of TV episodes.
Maybe she should have directed this.
You know, she also did four episodes of Gilligan's Island. So.
Wow. Now, speaking of directors, I was waiting for you to go in to the director of this, who he was.
Well, we're going to get to that.
All right.
We're going to get to that.
I'll backtrack. I'll wait. So we'll take a step back.
Okay. I'll let you pick him, and then I've got some other okay. trivia about this movie to stick in there for you.
All right. Well, then I'll go ahead and jump it right here. Robert.
Okay.
What? Foist or faced? I don't know if the U is silent. Foost? Fust?
Hamburger.
He spoke French. He's dead. But
anyway, that cat.
Yeah, and you know. Yeah, surprised this movie turned out the way it did because he's, you know, mostly known for directing The Abominable Dr. Fibes and Dr. Fibes Rises Again. But
that's right.
You know,
and he wrote the second Fibes.
Oh, well, there you go. So, you know, and you know, man, who doesn't like Fibes, you know? And it just really doesn't show in this.
This one, I think I had read somewhere before about this that he said he really didn't understand what was going on, so he shot it pretty straightforward. I mean, what was it, an early review I'd read, I think someone said they had went late into the theater and they thought they had come in the wrong theater and thought they had stepped into watching a spaghetti western, because that I guess that entered into that first part where
I was going to bring that up.
Well, Shatner's first going to meet Corbis.
Yeah, the way it's shot. It's shot. It's nice. I mean, he chooses some really good, you know, some nice camera work and the way the camera moves around.
There's some nice stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And this stuff just jumps and doesn't make any sense, like, and people's reactions to things. Like,
oh, yeah.
Right at the beginning, you know, it starts right in with the noises in the house and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's it seems like it's going to be a cool movie because it starts like right in the middle of a story. Like you're trying to catch up. Like shit has been going down, you know.
But then, you know, when the guy comes on the porch, his father, Shatner's father, and he's doesn't have any eyes and then he's melting already.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
No.
But anyway, Shatner, they don't try to move towards him like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, they just sort of stare at him while he's
like,
standing there talking.
Yeah, like,
and he's been missing for days at a time here.
Yeah, they don't react horrified. They just look like, dad's melting.
Yeah. You know? You don't see that every day.
Yeah. Well, there's a problem right there.
Well, yeah, and then when the old guy, when he turned around, the old guy's hanging. Shatner just stands there and looks at him and then moves, but it's still not like, oh, my God, what happened? And then, you know, and when he moves into the house, when he knows, hears the screams and sees the stuff in the door, in the window, he walks in. He doesn't run in, you know. You hear somebody screaming, you'd run in there. And there's all sorts of odd things like that that just don't make any sense with that whole first part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's, but, well, the whole thing is really kind of disjointed and uneven in the pacing and...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no, I was saying in pacing and in story, it's really uneven to where at some parts you, it's like, wait a minute, what was going on right before this? Did I miss something? You know, it just jumps, kind of, and it just kind of leaves you wondering at the end. Like, okay, you got to kind of think about what you just watched, but not think about it in a way that movies make you think, but think about it to try to remember how the story went, you know?
Right.
To make some sense of it.
Had they built up something with Borgnine, then what happens at the end, the very end, would have been a great payoff.
Yeah, it's like it was supposed to be one of those 70s, you know, downer ending little shocker stings, and it really kind of makes you go, oh, like you were almost expecting it, and then it didn't happen, and then it happened, you're like, oh, okay. You know?
Now you're talking about Corbis reappearing at the end.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, the very, very end, right there, where you're like...
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's like a happy ending, and then you're like, oh, okay, I thought it was going to be a downer ending. Oh, okay, there it is. You know?
Yeah,
it doesn't...
It
doesn't build to a like, you know, dun 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 to a shocker ending or anything.
Yeah, that was the one I had a problem with, and part of that is it takes so long with the melting and stuff. And
oh yeah, you're ready to go home by that point.
Yeah, because you don't know any of those people. It'd be different if you were able to see people and then they melted.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't know who any of those people are.
You don't have anything invested in anybody.
Yeah, and that's in anybody. The mom, anybody. I mean, it makes no sense why the mom has held this book for so long and then just...
And why didn't he just take
nothing?
It?
Nothing.
I mean...
She
why didn't he just walk in the house and grab it?
She just becomes one of the legion of hell aliens, you know? With nothing. And you never see it. You never see what convinces her.
And when Shatner has his eyes blacked out, you're like, hey, Michael Myers.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like the part where he's trying to be tempted.
Yeah.
And I wish they had shown more of that, like there was more temptation and he was able to resist some of it. But then finally, you know, but he's kissed by that woman.
Yeah.
And then it turns out to be his mom. And he's just sort of like, Mom, I mean, it was no disgust or anything, just Mom.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have like a slow burn on his temptation, like over a couple of scenes, you know, to build. Like,
yeah, but he freaks out in the church.
Yeah,
for no reason. I mean, what does he see? He doesn't see anything in the church.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's just you want it to be a better movie than it is.
Yeah,
you know, and you're trying to give it the benefit of the doubt, you know, at first, like through the first half of the movie. You're going, okay, maybe it's just trying to jump ahead and build, and it never really builds anything. And, I mean, though it's a joy to see Borgnine, I mean, you used to, you know, Borgnine is, you know, by this point, pretty much McHale's Navy. I mean, though he has played bad guys in other movies, you know, general being on TV has reached more people, at this point in time, by the 70s, as from McHale's Navy. So you're used to the jovial, smiling, you know, everybody's buddy, Borgnine, and here he's playing pretty much the devil, evil personified, and it's just man, it's great to watch him just kind of be smarmy and chew a little scenery, you know?
And he really is the best thing about it.
Yeah,
and you know it's cheesy now that goat makeup, but I loved it then.
It looks good though. I mean, it doesn't look cheesy, but it doesn't look bad cheesy. You know, it's well done.
For what they had, I mean, the stuff's pretty effective. The guy that did it, you know, that was Berman Studios.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh my gosh, Berman worked on Gargoyles.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He did. They worked on some of the Gargoyles stuff. They did Empire of the Ants. They did Prophecy.
Oh, yeah. So they were all over the place.
All they even did, you know, a Shatner link, they Ellis Berman worked on Star Trek V.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there you go. So coming back.
Yeah.
You know.
So, so there's more of those connections, you know.
Yeah. Talking about it being disjointed and missing the boat on a lot of points, it was, there's a lot, like we said earlier, there's a lot of shots that are just set up really great. Like, you know, looking through the car windows at the people outside talking and these long shots and just a lot of interesting camera work and all. But it really kind of suffers from it's a, trying to be a horror movie, but there's no real scares in it.
Yeah, the direction of it just could not set up scary moments, like jump moments. Like even when Travolta jumps out, it's scary.
Yeah.
It's a wide shot. It's not...
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't sneak at him. There's none. And they could have done so much of that.
I mean,
they could have had more of the plotting and the tempting of Borgnine's Corvus character on Shatner and on his family and breaking them down and then getting the book. Talk about a horrible jump of editing and just making no sense. There's the scene with Eddie Albert and Skerritt and Skerritt's wife there at the lecture talking.
Yeah.
The next scene is Skerritt and his wife driving to the town.
Yeah. Yeah. Just all of a sudden.
Discussion about that they found out anything. Like, how would they even find out what was going on?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden we're just introduced to these characters out of nowhere.
Yeah. And you say, you know, you kind of assume that, well, maybe the sheriff got a hold of them. Shoot, the sheriff's in, you know, which is Keenan Wynn, he's in two scenes, and one of those he's already possessed.
He's in cahoots.
Yeah, you never know what that deal is. I mean, I guess he got a good paycheck for his two scenes, but
yeah.
Then the next thing is, you know, when after Skerritt escaped from the town the first time, after he leaves and walks back into the woods, or in the desert, and then suddenly it's daytime and he's on the porch with Eddie Albert. Like, what, did Albert come with them in the first place?
Yeah.
You never know. And, you know, it's like, well, why did Albert even come along?
Yeah.
At that point, they didn't know anything about Satanists. They just knew that something had happened. Apparently, they'd known something had happened. But
yeah,
so that was pretty strange.
Well, and also too, there's this Satanist church in the middle of a ghost town in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, well, they shot it in New Mexico, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's something funny. You'll like this, and I always love this. Is like, how did they get? You kind of get, well, Sandy Howard and them, they had worked with Borgnine.
Yeah.
But who else did they consider for any of this stuff? So you'll like this. I found
Okay.
The Fibes connection. Price was considered, Vincent Price, for the Corvus part.
Oh, man.
Which I'm trying to imagine what he would have looked like in the goat makeup.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
For the Eddie Albert part, Peter Cushing.
Oh,
his name got tossed out. Probably too expensive. I'm sure Eddie Albert came at a better rate.
Yeah, a meal and a bus ride.
Yeah, and this was, you know, Albert had just finished, I guess by that time he was done with Green Acres.
Yeah.
And this was before he started doing some of the, because wasn't he in a couple of the disaster movies? Which one was he in, Earthquake?
Probably. When he did it, what, Escape from Witch Mountain, too, at sometime in here in the early 70s, mid-70s.
Yeah. Let me find real quick what he did.
Yeah. He did, I can't remember if it was Earthquake or if it was Towering Inferno.
I think it was Earthquake.
And didn't he do one of the airport movies, too?
Oh, yeah, Concord. He's in
79. There we go. Okay.
That's right. So right after this movie, he did Switch. So they got him off the
beautiful
out of the cheap.
But no way. little RJ for you.
Get out of the, yeah, beautiful. But another one, oddly enough, was Shatner's part.
Oh,
another actor that at that time was pretty much available for all kinds of stuff, Christopher Plummer.
Oh,
you know, the pre-Dreamscape days.
Pre-Star Crash days.
Yeah, Star Crash. Yeah. And it's funny to note a couple of these, you know, these people did this movie in between their higher profile thing.
Yeah.
Like for Shatner, we know this is that period where Trek has ended. He's having trouble getting parts. His divorce from his first wife pretty much left him high and dry.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was having to take anything he could get. And
Barbary Coast didn't last long.
Yeah, that was right after this.
Was it after this or before it?
Or maybe right before. Maybe it was because
this was 75.
Yeah, I think Barbary Coast was 74.
Okay.
Of course, Shatner has proved himself more durable than this movie.
Oh, man, you ain't kidding. Talk about, you know, you talk about a career comeback. I mean,
yeah.
It was a slow burn, really. You know, the Star Trek movies got him back in the public eye, and then T.J. Hooker, and that went on for a number of years, and you're like, all right, cool, you know, Shat's doing some work, and then nothing, and then, you know, then another Star Trek movie, and then he did, what was that, Rescue 911? You know, and then that put him back in kind of the public eye and out of Star Trek a little bit, and of course, the Star Trek movies kept rolling in, but then after that, it was nothing else for a while, and then what did he do after that? Not much. I think they did one of his Columbo TV movies where he played a villain again with a bad mustache. And then he, I don't know, I guess he did that guest spot on that, playing Denny Crane on that one lawyer show.
That was The Practice. That was The Practice. What really hit him was, I think, when he started poking fun at himself.
Yeah.
He did that tech war.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
TV show too.
Yeah.
The TV movies or whatever. When he started poking a little bit of fun, that began to get him. People looked at him in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't take himself too seriously, and he gets it.
Right. And then I think the big one was when he did Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because that was his first Emmy. That was a guest Emmy
really?
Nomination.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Big Giant Head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what? Right after that, he did Miss Congeniality.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was fantastic in those.
Which is a great little part. So, yeah. And then from there, I think, and then Priceline kicks in.
That Priceline money. That was good money.
Yeah. And then he began to poke a little fun and talk about this period of time.
Yeah.
You know, which he never did before. I think he was embarrassed by it. And then he kind of mellowed about that this was really, you know, people began to understand that was a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, to work. But they saw that, you know, I mean, great work ethic. And then, so, I mean, always working.
Yeah. And then once he did that Denny Crane, right after, you know, the Priceline, and then he got his own show with Spader there. Man, he was doing all kinds of other projects during this time.
Oh yeah.
And man, oh, yeah. And what, he just what hit 80 a year ago or something?
Oh, the Shad is 85.
85. And still
85.
Still working now and again. And not looking bad at all. Not looking 85. No. Hell no.
I mean, I think he looks better here than he did in Devil's Reign.
But, hey, nice way to bring it back.
Give me one of these. You know, this movie, if for nothing else, is just. That should be Devil's Reign.
That should be the trailer. That's it. Just him screaming like that.
Yeah.
You know, for all its faults, though, it starts out. It actually starts out on a dark and stormy night. Did you realize that?
Yes, and it is. It is a stormy night. You know, an interesting thing, you know, when cult movies are like this and people grab it, and here lately there's been a trend of people coming up with like new poster designs for these types of movies.
And yeah.
A couple cool ones for Devil's Reign that some people have done, but that made me go back and look at some of the original foreign poster art for this movie.
Oh yeah, I'll find those and I'll put some of those up on the Facebook page.
Some of the foreign promotional material is really cool, and I wouldn't mind grabbing up some of it.
Oh man, yeah, I'll definitely find some of that stuff and post it on the Facebook page along with the trailer and stuff. So hey,
yeah, I'll send you a couple that I have.
Oh, cool.
That are just really.
Now, aren't you working on a custom Corbis action figure? Weren't you working on that?
A Corbis and a Preston. It's a
package. Oh my god. And a Preston.
It's got to be, you got to have Satan and Tortured Soul.
You need to do a little diorama of that.
but interestingly enough, here's an offshoot of this since we're talking about kind of collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
You know that in the 70s, Tomlin put out the Monsters of Legend set.
Yeah, yeah.
They're sort of Mego.
Oh, yeah, the Yeti one, right?
And one of them is called a Yeti. And the head sculpt of the Yeti is actually based on the Corvus makeup without the horn.
Yeah, it is, too, man.
A little bit more hair down on the chin and around the head. But the head sculpt is actually Corvus from this movie.
And you know, there is a Mego repro company out there on the interwebs that does a repro of that head, so you could make a Corbis figure from that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm doing. I took my original head and cast it.
Oh,
and,
did you cast your own?
kind of re-sculpted, the horns and some of the other stuff to make, and then took one of the Mego Kirks and
blacked the eyes out.
Had to add a little weight to the face, though,
Yeah.
Had to add some weight. And fix the eyes and
poof the hair a little bit.
Hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Have you finished those yet? Or are you still working on them?
The heads are done.
Oh, I can't wait to see the whole figures when they're done.
I just have to make the costume. I got to make the costume. So Denise got to help me. Because I'm not a seamstress.
That is awesome. Oh, man.
That's on the project list to finish this summer.
Send me a picture of those heads. I'll put those on the Facebook page, too. Because there was a load of merchandise for Devil's Reign,
Well, there's absolutely nothing. I would love to see if there was any kind of theater promotional little things.
Yeah,
How we love those.
Oh yeah,
I mean, I've seen the press book, I've seen the posters, but that's it.
Yeah, no buttons or anything.
I haven't seen anything else.
Yeah. Talking about theaters, though, another interesting thing about this I found out was it was distributed by Bryanston Pictures, which shows up quite a bit in cult 70s stuff. Bryanston was the same company that distributed Texas Chainsaw and Deep Throat.
That's right.
Reportedly, or rumored that Bryanston was reported to be like a money laundering thing for the mob. At the time, the mob was supposed to, that was supposed to be one of their kind of offshoot, kind of legit companies, Bryanston Pictures.
Wow. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, people did, but they didn't talk about it back then.
I think it was crime enough having to watch some of this stuff.
Well, Devil's Reign anyway. I mean, I think that's why, I guess Toby Hooper or something, I was reading, I can't remember if this is right or not, but didn't really see a whole lot of money from Chainsaw because of the deal that was struck to distribute it.
Right.
And of course Deep Throat the same way, and I can't remember, there's some other things they distributed too that are really of note, from that period. I'll have to look that up and see.
Well, man, that's
but they picked a winner with this one, boy.
That's right. Well, this is one of those movies you wonder, how much did they pay people? This movie,
that was probably it.
In double checking internet movie database here, it was filmed in Mexico. It was Mexico. It wasn't New Mexico. It was actually Mexico.
Oh,
and I noticed this in the movie.
Yeah,
too. There's a shot of the chair, just a chair rocking.
Uh-huh.
I think this is right after Shatner leaves.
Uh-huh.
The first time. Actually, it's when Tom Skerritt leaves.
Okay.
And there's like a knife in the chair, on the arm of a chair.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
And it's rocking by itself. And you can see the fishing line coming from the knife to the going off screen where they were pulling the chair.
Wow.
Little goofs like that. I was like, I didn't see a bunch. I kept trying to see, like, could you see the cloak pulled back too far and see them, something. But
when I hear something in one of the scenes, one of the scenes where I think Scarrett and Eddie Albert in the church, or Scarrett and the girl are in the church, I can't remember where, but it's like all the disciples in the robes, you know, the wax people and Borgnine are coming back from somewhere. Like, they're all walking in formation. Right. Where did they go? What the hell did they do out in the desert? It didn't really show that. Why were they away from the church? The only reason is so Scarrett and whoever could be in the church and find what they found.
Right.
But well, and they had to be coming. Well, they had to come back to interrupt them.
Oh, they had left to do that ceremony with the girl.
Was that wasn't in the church?
Remember they had her out by the rock.
Oh, I thought that was in the church they did that.
No, they did hers out by the rocks. There's two scenes out by the rocks.
But
Shatner's thing at the beginning is...
Oh, his is in the church. But the second time they do something out by the rocks, Scarrett goes and interrupts it, right? Or is that back in the church?
No, that's the first time he interrupts it, and then...
You see how disjointed and confusing this one is, folks?
Yeah, because he gets away. Remember, he gets away.
Yeah.
And then goes back and gets Eddie Albert, and then they come and... Then they get in the church because they're back doing the thing again.
Yeah. Okay. I would say I'd have to watch it again to confirm that. But yeah. No, I really don't.
I will admit it to watching this again last night. Here, worth noting, Borgnine and Eddie Albert get top billing before the title.
Wow, man. So, well, that just shows you where everybody was in their careers at that point.
Who was on top? Borgnine was just the character actor, dependable, you know.
Yeah.
He could get the job done.
Yeah, he was
and
the veteran.
These people, I think they got them because they were cheap, you know.
Yeah.
And in his first movie role,
John Travolta.
Barely
in it.
I think he maybe has one line.
Yeah. This was so he could get his SAG card, yes.
That's right. You know. They wanted him for Boy in a Plastic Bubble, but they said, look, unless you got your SAG card, you can't do it. So he took this.
Because this was just before Welcome Back, Kotter, wasn't it?
Yeah, probably so.
Man.
And, of course, you had mentioned Anton.
Oh, yeah. The most famous Church of Satan leader.
Yeah.
At this point, or at any point, really. People, you know, the one that people really know. Anton LaVey, written a few books on the satanic rituals, the satanic church, and... really outspoken on the subject. I've seen a couple documentaries on the guy. Yeah, and he was a technical advisor on this and actually had like a small part. Maybe had himself had a line or two. More than Travolta. I don't know.
Well, this whole movie was shot in 6 weeks. So,
well, that long, huh?
Maybe this explains why Shatner, you don't see him there in some of those shots of the followers, because he has to leave for 3 days. To go to a Star Trek convention in New York.
That's right. I read that was like written into the contract.
Yeah, he had to order his convention.
Well, he didn't want to miss that autograph money. You know, it wasn't as lucrative as it is now, but it was it was guaranteed money.
Yeah, back then he would sign, but they had to pay. And his rate, I always heard when I was going to conventions back then, was $20,000.
Wow.
But I'm sure at that point it probably wasn't.
No, not near.
But it may have. I mean, I know right around 77, 78, that's when it was supposedly $20,000 to get him to do a convention.
Oh, yeah.
And then he stopped doing pretty much altogether there for a while until, you know, what, after Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, then it was few and far between.
And now it's like every other convention he's there.
Yeah. And charging more and more and more. It's ridiculous.
Hey, got to keep up those horses.
Well,
horse
expensive, you know. Oh, hey, one thing we didn't talk about yet is the title of the movie, The Devil's Reign. You know, what The Devil's Reign actually is, because the whole movie, you're up to a point, you're trying to figure out what the hell is The Devil's Reign. Because it's R-A-I-N, as in actual rain, not like you rain over people.
That's odd because, you know, that's such a cheesy movie. They just need a devil in the title.
Yeah, but it actually, in the movie, what it is, this globe-like device thing that takes people's souls and pretty much exchanges their souls for wax bodies. If it cracks open, or it's going to release the devil's rain, which is all these demons and everything that their souls feed or something like that upon everybody.
They're going to get out and they cause the rain. Why did his dad melt at the beginning. You know that.
This just hit me the other night. Phyllis and I were driving, you know, home from somewhere, and we're talking about Devil's Reign because the podcast was coming up. Not because Devil's Reign just comes up in our conversations.
I should hope not.
But it just hit me. Have you seen the live action Scooby Doo movie from like 2002?
No.
Well, you should. One, Rowan Atkinson's in it, but there's this device in it called the Daemon Ritus that the bad guy is using to steal people's souls. and they get released at some point, and some of the souls go back into the wrong people, and it's, you know, it's shenanigans. But yeah, so I had to look up Daemon Ritus to see what it meant. And Daemon, of course, means demon, which could be with devil, but right. A Ritus does not mean rain. I forget, but I was like, oh, I was so disappointed. I was hoping it was going to be like, you know, Latin for rain or something.
Right.
But yeah, it's a very similar plot.
Because rain was an easy special effect.
Yeah. But, you know, this movie would have only been helped if the Scooby Gang had shown up at some point.
I would have had everybody's soul had it been for those pesky kids.
Jinkies, we thought it was a devil, but it's just old Mr. McHale.
Yeah. It's the pilot from Airwolf.
Yeah.
And Bomberino. Captain Clark, what are you doing here?
Exactly.
And where's Jar Jar?
Gee, Mr. Douglas, what did you show up?
Yeah, Mr. Haney instead of Keenan Wynn is the show.
Oh, man, that would have been awesome.
Mr. Douglas?
Now, you know, here's a movie. You know, you talk about all these remakes happening right now. Here's a movie that could stand to be remade and be remade into something better, you know?
Couldn't be any worse.
Well, yeah. I mean, because it is so disjointed, and so, you know, it's like a real subdued TV movie. I mean, hell, they did an episode of Coal Shack with Tom Skerritt, and it had to do with, you know, the Satanism a little bit. And
right, I remember that.
You know, and it had more suspense and foreboding than this movie does. And that was, what, like a half-hour TV episode, maybe?
This is a movie that begs for Guillermo del Toro to get a hold of.
Now that would be kind of cool.
I would pay to see that, or I would pay to see Rob Zombie's The Devil's Ring.
Oh man, yeah.
But only if Dan Robot can play the sheriff.
Oh, it's on! It's on! I got take my money right now.
Right,
man. Yeah. Now there you go. Rob Zombie could probably do a hell of a job remaking Devil's Reign instead of Halloween.
And Malcolm McDowell as Corbis.
Oh, I'm in. Okay, well, who's the Shat? Who's playing Shatner's part? You know who is? Shatner.
Shatner.
or at least as the father that melts at the beginning. At least a cameo like that. That would be oh, that'd be so awesome.
It could be the old guy there that says, they didn't have any faces.
No, Shatner would have to be the father that melts at the beginning, and the Shat part would have to be played by Chris Pine.
Yeah. So I
want to see that. Oh, man, I would be all over that movie.
And Tom Skerritt could play his regular role.
Yeah, Tom Skerritt could play himself.
Tom Skerritt could play Dr. Richard.
Tom Skerritt would play the Eddie Albert part.
Yeah, Dr. Richard. Yeah. That was the guy that played Dr. Richard. It's like, what was his first name, Reed?
He wasn't that smart.
That's right. Yeah. Evidently not, because he left the book laying there.
Yeah. Man.
Oh, my God. Oh, Lord. What else can we milk from this
book? Oh, God, I don't know. Recasting, it's always fun. But you know that's true, man. This is one I would see a remake of this, and I hate remakes with a passion, because 9 times out of 10 they are crap, and it just shows a real lack of imagination and effort on Hollywood's part these days. But taking one that was kind of mediocre like this, and you know, or even not very good, that had a decent concept, especially for the time when you know Satanism stuff, and there were a lot of Satan type movies out, You think it would have done a little better, but it just, yeah, it just didn't, critically, it didn't do good, at the box office, and however many years later, now it still isn't doing very good.
Well, hey, it warranted a DVD special edition release.
That's true.
Somebody thought they could milk some money from it.
Yeah, yes, it did. Yes, it did. Well, you cashed in on the Shatner's repopularity and everything. Yeah, man, it's just, it's one of those notorious movies that you've heard about. You've heard the title, may have seen a couple pictures, but for years and years you've heard the title. You may not have seen it, but you've always known that it's been around. And then when you finally get to watch it, it's like, well, how underwhelming. I mean.
Well, it came out in the middle of the summer, you know.
So, yeah.
And back then, it wasn't a, summer wasn't...
It wasn't the big blockbuster time to release movies.
Yeah, so who knows how much money it actually made.
Not much.
It would be kind of interesting to, wonder how much it actually made.
Man.
But, when you were a kid and you saw it, I bet it was pretty good.
And see, I never saw it as a kid. The first time I saw it was a few months ago. When I finally got the DVD of it, I never saw it, released on TV. And of course, I was too young to go see it in a theater back then. But I said,
I assume the first time I saw it was TV. I know I didn't see it at the theater.
Yeah, because this was 1975. So unless your parents wanted to go,
that was going to happen.
Yeah, but you think this would have been a late night TV staple through the 80s and stuff. But I cannot remember ever seeing it come on TV around here anyway.
I remember seeing it in the 80s.
Yeah,
I could have seen it at a convention.
Could have been. Yeah, I just remember seeing a couple of pictures from it in Famous Monsters and maybe Fangoria. Over the years, and then hearing about it, and of course joking about it because of the cast, but I never saw it, never saw it on VHS, and until, like I say, I got the DVD a few months ago and watched it, and I was sitting down ready for it, and I was like, man. Though it does have some interesting, like I said, some of the shots are more than what I expected, the cinematography a little more than what I expected from it, but the story and the pacing and the way it plods along and the disjointedness from scene to scene, it just doesn't hold together.
Now, I have seen a picture of this. They did do a novelization of it.
Oh, so there's one piece of merchandising out there. We must seek this out and find it now. If you want to fill in the gaps, read the book.
25 pounds, or 13 pounds from England, filling those plot holes,
I think I'll just be satisfied with what we got.
Yeah, I don't think it's, going to make a big difference.
No. I think you're right, though. I think we pretty much milk this for all we can. We started talking about the paperback and recasting the movie.
Yeah,
it's really not a whole lot to say about it. I mean, I think we stretched this about the way they stretched the movie, really, because it is what it is. And like I say at the end of every podcast, man, find the movie, watch it yourself, draw your own conclusions, and share in our pain.
Yes.
But above all else, watch the movie itself, and if you get a chance.
Well, one of the things about it is a movie like this it's such a crappy movie and a misguided movie. But now we watch it for different reasons. We're watching these sorts of things to see these low moments of these people, slumming it and
chewing some scenery and...
Yeah, and this period of time, there was so much of this kind of stuff and so much of it, neat ideas, unusual ideas.
Oh, yeah.
That just couldn't make it pay off.
Yeah, you're waiting for the payoff and it just kind of da-da-da-da-da, it just goes along and then, look. Here's about 5 minutes, which is a long damn time on screen, of people melting into wax puddles.
Yeah, and that goes on for a seeming...
For days.
It's unreal how long that that goes on.
Oh, God. Oh. And on that note, I think that'll about do it for this one. I got nothing else.
Nothing. I'm tapped.
That's right. That's right. Hey, to everybody out there listening, drop us a line at the Phantasmo email it. That's phantasmoad@gmail.com, phantasmode, all one word, @gmail.com, or drop us a line, post something on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. And as always, I'll be putting up a album full of pictures from this for this podcast and throwing the trailer up there. And if I find any other cool stuff relating to it, that'll be up there too. And if you're in the area, Friday the 15th of July at the Narrow Expanded Cinema, I'm going to be hosting The Lost Boys. So come out and check that out, Lost Boys on the big screen. And that's at the Narrow Expanded Cinema in downtown Norfolk on Colley Avenue. If you're not, then just disregard what I just said and be looking for the next episode of the podcast.
And to anyone out there, if you are not following this podcast, because this is the place to be listening, then here's your threat. If you don't continue to listen to what Rob is doing, then the next edition of this will be, Oh God, Book 2. So keep that in mind.
Oh God, You Devil? Is that what?
Yeah, we'll do a double shot, Book 2 and Oh God, You Devil.
Oh, we'll do a Ted Wass marathon.
Hey, that alone. Ted Wass, the threat of Ted Wass.
And on that note, we're going to say goodnight, everybody.
Good night.